Welcome to CAGDU, about your dog and you. CAGDU stands for Capital Area Dog Guide Users. We are located in the capital, Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. The information we share is for dog guide users everywhere. Our hosts are Reverend Ray Razor, with his dog guide, a culture from Shepherd Raven, and Charlie Crawford, with his knife dog guide lab retriever. Both of these are graduates of Seeing Eye Dog Guide School. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Who should start this off, Ray?
Yeah, well, you can start it off, Charlie, since you precede me by a couple of years. I want to be courteous.
Well, okay, now that I well established as a senior, I can welcome everybody to the program. And as the first president of the Capital Area Guide Dog Users Incorporated, I am glad to be here and also, you know, to join with Reverend Ray, who is our second president of the Capital Area Guide Dog Users. So we're here in very presidential company. I want to say that what's really interesting about today is that this is a time when all of us have had some pretty severe challenges in terms of social distancing and having to deal with staying at home and figuring out how to help with guide dogs and all that sort of thing. And the virus that we're all concerned about is this thing called the COVID-19. And as I understand it, dogs cannot give that to people, but we people can give that to dogs. And so it becomes important for us to make sure that we're healthy and safe so that our dogs remain healthy and safe.
Yeah. So, and I'm looking very forward to this, a new adventure with CAG Dog, as we like to call it, the show, your about your dog and you. And Ms. Renee, which is our producer as well as our announcer, would you give us the lineup for today's show, please?
Absolutely. Can you hear me?
Yes, very well.
Okay, great. Okay, so our lineup is Stop Dogging Us Around, and that'll be a surprise, and Charlie's Corner. And our special guest is Glenn Hoagland, president of the Seeing Eye Dog Guide School, the oldest dog guide school in the country. And our guest again is Glenn Hoagland of the Seeing Eye. And Glenn described that his approach to the presidency would be to listen and learn. But then came COVID-19, a game changer. And so we'll learn what is happening at the Seeing Eye and how he is meeting that challenge. We are also joined on the line by Melissa Allman. She's an advocacy specialist at Seeing Eye who can update us on legislation that protects dog guide users.
Okay, thank you. So the segment that we're going to do real quick about Stop Dogging Us Around is that, unfortunately, being blind and in this environment today with this virus, blind, and they want people to stay away from each other. This is Reverend Ray speaking. Is that blind people? Some people say it's a petri dish for blind people because we have to touch everything to know where we are and stuff. And so for us, it's really a challenge. And I even had people to the point where one time I would come out or something, and they would run over to help me, and you know, especially with these beautiful dogs that C and I give us. But now they're not running over too quickly to see if they can help me out. They sort of from afar now say, "Hey, don't go that way. Go that way." They they sort of holler at us now. So we feel like we're not being quietly dogged around, but it is a little different for blind people because we have to touch everything, and that has become very, very challenging. So, and Charlie, how do you find that, especially with you and your spouse both being blind? Your wife has a little vision, just enough to get her in trouble, or does she have any at all? I can't remember.
She has just enough to get her in trouble, but she has a great guide dog from Freedom, and his name is Cal Tag, and he's a great dog, and he's 10 years old and has not figured that out. He still acts like he's two, and especially when it comes to food time, you know. So
there's
also this rumor. I understand there's a rumor out there that at the Seeing Eye, they're secretly teaching dogs how to talk.
Oh, really?
I'm sure that's some rumor.
I'm sure that is some rumor. Go ahead, Charlie.
This is our first
adventure and our first show, and of course we'll have some rough edges to smooth it out as we go along, and me and Charlie get our rhythm of our personalities and all of that kind of thing. And so, but we're so appreciative that we have our first show to start off with something top shelf, and CNI is top shelf. I'm telling you, I've worked for CNI for 2 years as a national field rep under Dave Liu and the president there. That was Mr. Rosen. I was Stahl or Bloom.
Rosenthal.
Right. And it was two exciting years. And one thing they taught me as I went around the country and stuff, top shelf. CNI did everything top shelf, and I carried that over with every organization, everything I do, top shelf. I won't even have an event we can't have paper plates and napkins. That's not good. Everything has to be top shelf. So I appreciate CNI for that. Now, Charlie, Charlie's Corner, that we want to call it, Charlie C, and this is where you can get to talk about things about persons with disability across the board, transportation, whatever, that you have some information for us. So we'll take a couple of minutes with that first.
That sounds great. Thank you so much. And, I do agree that we're going to get rid of the rough edges, and maybe in a year from now we'll have the Razor Crawford Report. How's that? That's awesome. Anyway, but under any circumstances, Charlie's Corner is a good idea because, you know, my thought patterns are pretty scattered sometimes. And so every week's going to be a surprise. But this week I wanted to talk a little bit about what I think is really important for blind folks to do, and that is to make sure that we have an understanding of who the folks are in our local areas who make decisions that impact us. And most often that is either a city council or a town council, in our case, a county council, and getting to know the people who are members of that organization is really important because it's their responsibility to make sure, to the extent possible, that all the folks in their jurisdiction, the towns or counties in which they govern, are properly serviced by the government so that whenever there's a problem that a person experiences, they can and will be able to assist. Now, that manifests itself in Montgomery County, where I live, through a couple of things. And Raisin's over here getting her 2 cents in. I don't know if you can hear her or not. Raisin, that's enough, okay? Now, be quiet. Thank you very much. And anyway, back in the, I guess it was maybe 10 years ago, maybe 15, we began to experience a need for the ability to be able to cross the street safely and to be able to know when the lights had changed and the pattern of traffic would be appropriate. Now, we all grew up with a mobility training, obviously, and so we listened for the traffic on our left, on our left at the parallel traffic, And that was always helpful. But with all the new inventions, the slip lanes and right-hand turns and all that stuff that was going on, it became a little confusing. So, and I have to give Seeing Eyes some credit here, because with the help of Lucas Frank, who's an instructor, very accomplished instructor at Seeing Eye, he and a couple of mobility instructors, they helped me to gain a better understanding of what we needed to present to the county council in order to make sure that the government understood why it was necessary for us to have decent, accessible pedestrian signals. And I won't go into the whole histrionics of it, but enough is sufficient to say that we were able to demonstrate to the county council the importance of having those. And we were also able to get language into the Manual of Uniform Traffic Control Devices, which is the Bible for traffic engineers, that effectively explained accessible pedestrian signals so that people could use them properly. And then, of course, we had the... go ahead.
30 seconds, Charlie.
30 seconds? Blah, 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 blah. How's that?
Okay.
I'll do part two of the corner next time.
All right. Okay. So that's Charlie Porter with Charlie Sheen. Thank you, brother. And Ms. Renee Nelson, would you introduce our guest, please, once again, before we go to break?
Absolutely. Well, once again, we want to remind our listeners that our guest is Glenn Hoagland, the new president of the Seeing Eye Dog Guide School. Now, Glenn described that his approach to the presidency would be to listen and learn. But then came COVID-19, the game changer. We will learn what is happening at the Seeing Eye and how he is meeting that challenge. We are also joined by Melissa Allman, advocacy specialist at the Seeing Eye, who can update us on legislation that protects dog guide users. And as we go to break, we want to thank our sponsor. You are listening to CAGDU, About Your Dog and You. And as we go to break, we want to thank the Big Bad Wolf, a Primo pet store located in Northwest Washington, D.C. They carry raw, organic, and premium foods. If your dog needs it, they have it. They have store-to-door deliveries in the DMV. So give them a call at 202-747-3434. That's an easy number. Even I can remember that one. 202-747-3434. Back to Reverend Radio Ray and Charlie.
All righty. Thank you very much, Ms. Renee. And good afternoon, Mr. Glenn, and good afternoon, Ms. Melissa. Thank you
good
all
afternoon.
So much.
Hi, good afternoon.
Your busy time to be part of our inaugurated show. And we will have this posted on our website. We'll link it where you all can get a copy if y'all want to edit it to make it sound very professional. So we appreciate that. Appreciate Charlie in initiating you all to join the show with us. So, Mr. Glenn, would you tell us a little bit about yourself and some other things that you're looking to do? And we always send out and let people know that our show is not the I Got You, and we're not trying to create those sensationalism or anything like that. We are all about just giving information out to our community, which is the blind and visually impaired public. Okay, so take it away.
Sure. Well, thank you very much, Reverend Ray, and I'm really delighted to be here and really feel so fortunate to have become the Seeing Eye's next leader. And, you know, many people have asked me how I have come to be here, because I did not come from a background directly in blind services or dog training or anything, but I did for many years lead several other types of nonprofit organizations, mainly land conservation organizations. And in those organizations, what we were doing really at the forefront of connecting people to nature, but also creating adaptive and universal design for learning in environmental education so that outdoor programs and places were accessible to people of all abilities. And, I knew about the Seeing Eye my entire life, growing up not far from the Seeing Eye here in northern New Jersey. And my mother was a big fan of the Seeing Eye, And I was increasingly hearing and reflecting on my mother's voice, having led other types of nonprofit organizations for so many years, saying, you know, what ways throughout my life will I continue to seek important work, you know, with human service impact? And my mother was blinded suddenly as a teen, but, you know, like so many blind people, went on to live a very full and accomplished life, even though she never herself had a seeing eye dog. But she always talked about the seeing eye, you know, and spoke in very reverent terms about its mission. So growing up, I always had this idea, you know, boy, I'd love to run the seeing eye someday, but it was just kind of a pipe dream. And then I saw the advertisement for Jim Kutch, that he was retiring and his position would be coming open. And as you know, Jim was a tremendous leader here for many, many years, a graduate of the school, first graduate to have ever been the leader of this school. And it was great to hear, Reverend Ray, that you also were once on our staff. That's wonderful. And so I feel like I've really joined a group of people who, you know, I'm just in awe of the clarity of mission and purpose and the way people work here together, you know, towards our common cause of producing the world's best guide dogs and the world's best guide dog partnerships. And it really is, as the book written by one of our graduates, Peter Brock Putnam, says, it's called Love in the Lead, you know, and everything here is really about keeping us in the lead as the original and premier guide dog school. So I'm just really delighted to be here. And yes, it is experiential learning. I've been thrown into the deep end, and now we are dealing with something unprecedented, which is for the first time in 91 years not being able to serve a class due to the COVID crisis. And, you know, one of the things the Seeing Eye is really also known for, from the day that Morris Frank stepped off that boat on June 11th, 1928, and walked across West Street in New York City, we have been known as, you know, an integral partner in shaping public policy and guaranteeing access and accommodations for people who use service animals. And that is really where the work of my colleague Melissa, who's here on the phone with us today, our senior specialist of advocacy and government relations, really comes in.
Melissa, your colleague, Melissa, would you introduce yourself and tell us why they give you a paycheck at CNI?
Well, you know, I think they just like me. I think that's really what it is. No.
Great answer, Melissa.
You know what? Why not, right? My name is Melissa Allman, as you know, and I have been the advocacy and government relations specialist at Seeing Eye for, it will be 2 years on April 23rd. So I also feel very privileged to work with such a great organization. I have been working with my first Seeing Eye dog, Luna, who is a Yellow Lab Golden Cross, for a little over 3 years now. She'll actually be turning 5 on Monday, which is very hard for me to believe. But so before I came to work at the Seeing Eye, I practiced law for 12 and a half years, mostly working in the field of fair housing, or in other words, representing people who were victims of housing discrimination. And one of the things that came up in my work more and more frequently were cases involving people needing service animals as a reasonable accommodation in housing where animals were not allowed. And, of course, once I was matched with my Seeing Eye dog, those issues became of paramount importance to me and of interest. So my passion and desire to advocate for the rights of people with service animals continued to grow, and then in particular people who are guide dog handlers. But I wasn't really sure how that was going to happen beyond the sphere in which I was doing that, which was the fair housing context. And so I thought, well, I'll just have to wait and see what happens, because a job like the one I would like to do doesn't exist. And then one day I saw a job description in my inbox from the Seeing Eye. It was something that was sent out to grads, and I felt like I wrote it. I felt like it was a job description I wrote for myself, and I was so excited. I knew that it was going to be very competitive, and I would just be lucky to even be considered for the position, but I was, and it was, we all decided it was going to be, luckily the Seeing Eye decided it would be a good fit, and I had the honor of joining. And so what I do now is I assist graduates who have questions about their rights in various contexts, like whether it be air travel, housing, public access in public accommodations covered by the ADA. And so I provide them with information and resources and direction on what they might be able to do if they believe that their rights have been violated. But I also do presentations and public education. I do some training concerning service animal-related access issues to various organizations and state entities, and have done some traveling with respect to that work. And then I do some outreach for groups that come to the Seeing Eye. And I also do some work around legislation, as, you know, in the state of New Jersey. And I also make sure that I stay abreast of what's going on with things that would affect our grads. So, for example, the Department of Transportation has issued, as Charlie and Ray and Reverend Ray well know, a notice of proposed rulemaking concerning traveling by air with service animals. So it's been extremely important for the Seeing Eye to have a voice in that and to mobilize and support graduates so that they can have a voice in that as well, and make sure that they get their comments and their thoughts out there so that the department hears them.
Oh, okay. I'm going to let Charlie ask your question in a minute. But one comment, Melissa, I want to make, that you had reached out to me when you heard I became president of CAGDU. And fortunately, I guess God put you in certain places. I recently started working for a councilman in Prince George County at large, and I told him about we wanted to put together a bill, a law to be passed about the protection of guide dogs, and he said that he would champion the bill, so he would be he will submit the bill and all, and I have some other council people that's going to handle it, and we have people in the state legislature that's going to put it forth next year and all in Maryland. So that's going to be taken care of, and they're going to use as a model the Dusky Law, because we wanted to have some teeth in it. So that's going to be something that's going to happen. So I appreciate you reaching out, and Charlie and all of us will be working on that and formulating that. And I'm going to ask Glenn a question, then Charlie, you can jump in. But Glenn, being new and then thrown into this situation with this virus and everything, the most our people want to know, blind people want to know, as I go around and speak to people, is what is it that will have to happen or be accomplished before CNI could start? What measure you all would use, or what would have to happen before you all start classes again?
Yes, absolutely. Well, like everyone else, we are sort of beholden to and following the good guidance of public health authorities. And, you know, we want to make sure that, you know, before we reopen, you know, we're able to safely allow our students to travel here to train with us, or that our instructors can safely travel, you know, to do home and away visits, and that we can really bring our staff and our students and our dogs back to campus. Right now, we've had to foster out over 200 dogs from our main campus that are being entered in place, if you will, with our puppy raiser families. And our puppy raiser families, of course, are these incredible volunteers. We have over 500 puppies born per year, and in a normal year, and they're supported by these families who take them in and lovingly raise and socialize them for about 16 months until they come back to the Seeing Eye to come into our program as to dogs for to become trained as Seeing Eye dogs. So we had about 80 dogs in the program ready to serve students when we had to postpone our March classes, and now we've had to postpone our April classes. Luckily, we had students here who were able to finish their class with us, and then we were able to get them home safely to the U.S. and Canada, all throughout the U.S. and Canada, before the Canadian borders closed. And luckily, so far, no one on our staff or among our students has tested positive for COVID-19. So we're very fortunate there. We've been doing everything we can to practice all the social distancing and people working from home and people performing essential services to keep our campus going. We are still providing veterinary services as needed to our dogs. Our breeding station is still puppies are still being born because you can't stop that process quickly. So in the last 4 weeks, we delivered over 88 puppies to their puppy raiser families as we normally would, but we had to practice social distancing in relaying the puppies and the adult dogs to these families. And so all of those things are kind of what we call our limited operations mode right now, but we've already started planning for what we call a return to operations. And that's very time dependent. It's very virus dependent. But our goal would be to gear up as soon as we can to bring the dogs back. Some of those dogs were very much ready to be matched with students, and they will need less training to get, you know, to refresh their skills. Some of them were farther down the rung in terms of their training and will need more time. But we think once we get our dogs back, and we may not be able to get them all back at once because we may have to serve smaller classes initially if there's still a social distancing challenge. But we want to gear up as quickly as possible. And it'll take us about, you know, 3 to 4 weeks to train up the best dogs, the ones most ready to serve students. And then we hope to be able to bring back as many students as we can and make sure the dogs come back healthy and that they get their veterinary care and they're ready to go.
So, Charlie, you have a couple of questions. And, Charlie, also share with us, you on your ninth dog. When was it when you got your first dog and what year was it? Do you remember what your dog? And then ask Glenn and Melissa a couple of questions.
Well, it was the year one when I first got my first dog. I think it was 1970 or 71, I'm not sure. But it was a wonderful dog named Patsy. And she was a combination husky and German Shepherd. And she was just a beautiful, fawn, kind of colored dog. It's just I can tell you a lot of stories about her, but that's okay. I do also want to mention that in terms of the service animals, I want to give Melissa and Glenn a shout out for a really good job on their comments to the DOT and the NPRM. For the most part, they pretty much mirrored the comments of GDY and CAGDU. And I think they were well thought out and presented in the kind of way that I'm accustomed to hearing from the seeing eye, very thorough.
Now, Charlie, let me stop one moment. I'm always mindful of I'm listening like I don't know what you're talking about. What is all those alphabets that you just gave us? You gave us three different alphabets, D-O-D, something else, GDY. Tell us what those are, please, our listeners.
DOT is the Department of Transportation, and and GDY is Guide Dog Users Incorporated, which is the national organization of guide dog users. And I just want to also compliment Seeing Eye on. It's not just the dogs. I mean, obviously the dogs are 99% of the equation, but there's also really professional, good trainers there. And there's also, well, everybody knows about the food there. It's incredible. And
absolutely.
It's a wonder I didn't fall over from how much weight I gained when I went there. But anyway, what I'd like to ask you, Glenn, is, In terms of the future of Seeing Eye, you know, the world is changing and there are different things that we need to attend to. But what kinds of things are you seeing that are important to you as Seeing Eye evolves?
Sure. Well, you know, we were founded the year of the Great Depression, 1929. So the Seeing Eye, I'd like to think, will be around through thick and thin as it has been. And, you know, this currently obviously is a major form of disruption that we haven't seen in America or across the globe. And what we want to be able to do is, you know, do what we've done well and do it as sustainably as possible, but be as resilient and as adaptive to the current world situation as possible. We certainly, have a lot of strengths, as you said, the expertise of our instructors and trainers and so many others on our staff, the dedication of our kennel folks and our veterinary team. But also, I have to say, for me, the graduates are a powerful example for everyone. Your tenacity and determination to live your lives in the driver's seat and to use your abilities, to the fullest is really a key factor, not only in your success, but certainly in our success. And, we've served 17,000 successful guide dog partnerships since we were created and currently have about 1,700 active partnerships across the U.S. and Canada that we support graduates. And as you said, Charlie, you're on your ninth dog, so that's incredible, And today's student is tomorrow's graduate, is the following year, in 10 years will be a student again. So it's a cyclical process for us, and we want to continue to do it as best we can and as adaptively as we can, as the world changes and as our external environment changes. But, we want to be aware of how technology can be used in a complementary way to guide dog use. We want to be, as Melissa so aptly pointed out, we want to really make sure that we aren't backsliding and that we're gaining ground with respect to people's rights and the fair application of laws that protect service dog users and all people with disabilities. And so there's so much to be done so much to do to maintain our good reputation and make sure that we're collaborating with other guide dog schools across the U.S. and internationally through IGDF, which is the International Guide Dog Federation. And we have CUSDOGS, that's it's called, the Council of U.S. Dog Guide Schools. So those are all ways in which we collaborate with other dog guide schools across the U.S.
May I ask a question?
Sure.
Yes. Just say who you are.
This is Renee, the announcer. Melissa, I wanted to ask you, with people using comfort dogs or comfort animals, what impact has that had both legally and in terms of the public's acceptance? I know that Seeing Eye was in the forefront of getting the public used to service animals. So how has that impacted the work that they have done since the 1920s?
Well, I would say that one of the things that's challenging for everyone is understanding the nuances in the laws. So, for example, the Americans with Disabilities Act, which protects our right to be in public places accompanied by our service animals, that law does not protect the rights of people with comfort or emotional support animals to be in those places. But emotional support animals are allowed and are protected under the Fair Housing Act and under the Air Carrier Access Act for the purposes of air travel. So what that means is that people are often not really, really sure because they don't know the laws. And I think one of the things that has happened over time is that there has been a significant increase in the number of people with disabilities of all types, visible and invisible disabilities, that have come to rely on animals to provide them with some sort of support, whether it's an emotional support or whether it is to perform a task as service animals do. So it's fantastic that people with disabilities are able to work with animals in so many ways, Fusion. And of course, there are abuses that come with that, as they do with any law. But one of the things that the Seeing Eye always focuses on and always places above everything else is behavior. Service animals are trained to behave appropriately in public, and they're trained to perform tasks. If I am in a setting where there is another dog and I don't know, I may not know what that person's disability is. It's none of my concern. It's not really none of my business. And I don't know what task their dog is trained to perform. But from my perspective, when I'm out somewhere, whether I'm flying somewhere or whether I'm in a public place, my focus is on that dog, that other dog, being well-behaved and not interfering in any way with my dog. So I think that is the seeing eyes focus, that regardless of whether a dog is a service animal, if it's going to be in public, it should be well-behaved. And that includes seeing eye dogs, because service animals can be asked, can be excluded from public places if they are not well-behaved. So in the end, that's what it always comes down to. And I think if more people were able to sort of separate that from all of the confusion and focus on that, things might be a little bit clearer and a little less anxiety producing for those who are just doing their best, whether they are citizens out in public trying to work with their animals or businesses and proprietors trying to understand what their rights and responsibilities are.
Thank you. That's very clarifying.
Listen, Glenn, we appreciate you all's time, and we're going to ask you all to indulge us, and we're going to push this over to a few more minutes. There's just a couple other things we want to ask. And, Glenn, one of the things I wanted to ask, and I'm sure all, as you all brought up, or Charlie brought up about the wonderful food up there and the wonderful trainers you have, and I know, Glenn, being involved with so many nonprofit organizations, whenever we look to bring on a new leader, we definitely look at their ability to fundraise money. And tying those two things together, are you all going to be able to keep your staff and your trainers and all? Are you all going to be okay with that?
That is certainly our aspiration and our goal, and we feel that the Seeing Eye has built, you know, a strong organization. And, you know, yes, there's a downturn right now in the market, and there's probably a downturn in donor giving as a result of this COVID crisis, but we are really in it for the long run. And we already did a lot of work several years ago now to streamline the organization and do that without compromising the service delivery to students. So we feel really good about where we are, despite the challenges of going forward. And right now, we are not, in any position where we're under dire straits like some nonprofits I've heard about in this COVID crisis. So we're really, I'm really honored and privileged to be here to lead the organization through these challenging times. It's not easy, and we need to, stay nimble. But stay true to our mission.
Good. Charlie, questions?
Yeah, sure. The thing that concerns me these days is that the population is getting older. Not me, but the population is. And I need to ask about as people do grow older and they're not going to be as viable as they used to be in terms of traveling. Is the Seeing Eye thinking of any ways to accommodate those folks as they get older? What's happening in that circumstance?
Before you answer that, Charlie, let me clarify now. You mean persons that already have service animals that had a coupler and they're getting old, or you asking people that never had a dog and they are be applying? Because I know a number of people that already had them. What are you asking?
Well, it's really both the people that have dogs and then they retire them and they get a new dog, and people who are thinking about getting a dog for the first time.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And we do have an approach. Our instructors could elaborate on it more perhaps better than I could, but we do have an approach to working with people, to make sure the dog is a match for their current, pace and gait and, mobility. To make sure that the match is always, if someone has slowed down, for example, we want to make sure we don't give them a fast dog or a strong dog that's going to pull them or compromise their balance. So those are all ways we're always trying to match the best dog with the person, and at the same time we're always trying to, when we design and bring together a class, Sometimes classes might more, you know, weighted towards folks from a different age cohort. In the summertime, we often serve younger classes because those are students who want to get a dog during the summer. And then there might be other times a year when we are serving people who are graduates coming back for, you know, dog who are in their older age cohort. So we do try to do that, and we do, you know, do some home and away work with folks that need those special that special focus.
Great.
Well,
thank
Glenn,
you.
Okay, let me ask you a question because, like, I know you're new on board, but in your learning curve, did you realize how much went into training a guide dog, the phases of a plus preparing a person for that dog? I mean, in your learning curve, like, we all see the dog, it's wonderful,
right.
But
it has been incredibly eye opening for me. All of the things that go in, really, from the breeding and the work that we do as a leader in canine genetics, you know, in breeding for disease control, in breeding for behavior, in breeding out, you know, doing DNA sequencing to identify genetic markers for things like degenerative eye disease in dogs and hip dysplasia. And that, so it starts with, you know, creating the best dogs and the healthiest dogs and the best behaved dogs. And then, you know, the love that they receive from the puppy raisers and the socialization, then they come here for 4 months and are matched with our incredible instructors, and, you know, they really put them through the paces. And then all the work we do, you know, to, you know, really, you know, the intake we do with our students to make sure they're ready to come to class and be matched with a dog, and then all the work that's done here to get the students here and to support them while they're here, and then really the continuing relationship we have with our graduates, which is wonderful, and the fact that, you know, people can pick up the phone anytime and ask an instructor, you know, how do I deal with this situation now that I'm home, or can I have a visit? So it's just amazing to me, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. So, yeah, I'm in awe of the intricacies and interdependencies of what we do here.
Yeah. I mean, I'm on my seventh dog, and it still fascinates me and what these dogs can do. Melissa, question for you. What are the top phone calls you get concerning what from students, and what is it like now going out into the public and not the resistance? How still educated we as guide dog ambassadors have to be every day?
Well, I think, well, first of all, before this pandemic started, I think that the most common calls and questions that I was getting were from graduates were things concerning air travel and quite a bit about rideshare services. I have the misfortune of hearing from so many graduates in more recent months that they have been denied an Uber or a Lyft because of the presence of their seeing eye dog. And so I spent a lot of time trying to counsel graduates through that and to educate them about their options and to encourage them to complete the NFB Rides, the National Federation of the Blind Rideshare Survey, so that more data can be collected concerning the rideshare issue, because as many listeners probably know, the National Federation of the Blind took legal action against Uber and Lyft several years ago as a result of violations of the ADA, and there was a settlement agreement, and that's being monitored. So I was receiving quite a few calls from graduates about that before the pandemic started. Now, you know, people really aren't going anywhere. So the calls have been a little bit more about the Department of Transportation, notice of proposed rulemaking and the comments that people are preparing. And the other issue that's been coming up a bit is this complicated issue, as you pointed out earlier, Ray, of social distancing and how much more complicated that becomes when you are blind or have low vision and are working with a guide dog. So those are issues that have been coming up, and those are issues that we've been working very hard to try to educate the public about, the importance of the public being taking some ownership over and responsibility for social distancing when you see a guide dog user, because guide dogs are not trained to stay 6 feet apart from people. And if
right.
you can't see someone unless they speak, you may not know that they're there. So that's something that we've had to work hard to sort of educate the public about, and also the continued importance of not engaging or interacting with our dogs in any way, especially during this time when a dog is not, you know, obviously we're not giving the virus to our dogs and they're not becoming symptomatic, but if someone has the virus and touches our dogs, that causes our dog to potentially become a conduit of that virus. So that is one more reason why it's so important for people to not engage with our dogs, but also for the reasons that have always existed, that it's distracting to our dogs and puts us in danger if they are distracted when trying to do their work, especially by other dogs that are not being managed. So we continue to try to educate the public about those issues, the importance also of keeping their dogs as far away as our dogs, from our dogs as possible. I think communication is key here, right? Because even though social distancing is what it is and it's important for people to keep their distance, it's still okay to speak. There's no danger in words. So if I think I hear someone approaching me and I don't know how close they are to me, I will make my voice heard, whether it's in the form of talking to my dog so that they are aware of me, or maybe I'll speak to the person and say hello and mention that I'm trying to keep my distance. And I appreciate if people do the same for me, saying, I'm up here ahead on your right, or I've got a dog up here. And then we can have an exchange about the best way to get our dogs safely around each other.
But listen, let me
ask
you one
question.
Sure, go ahead, Ms. Renee.
I wanted to, I'm not sure if this is, should be directed to Glenn or to Melissa, about Dusty's Law. Can you give us a little bit of the background and how that came has it become law in New Jersey now?
Yes, and
yeah,
I would defer
law
to Melissa on that.
Yeah, Dusty's Law was passed in 2014. What happened was several years before that, a seeing eye puppy raiser and the puppy that he was raising were viciously attacked by a dog that was not well managed. And the puppy raiser sustained significant injuries, and the dog was so traumatized that it had to be career changed, which is a term that we use when a dog is not going to be able to complete its training to become a seeing eye dog, to become a guide. So there were already a lot of concerns in the guide dog community about interference from other dogs that were not well controlled by the public with guide dogs, interference ranging from perfectly innocent social interference or potential maybe a little bit of mildly aggressive behavior to really horrible attacks. And the problem with that is that if there is an attack on a guide, then that dog can have a number of consequences. There could be no consequences, but usually the consequences do exist. Either the dog is injured or maybe the dog becomes completely unable to work or has some fears that compromise its work down the line. So this kind of behavior from other dogs that are not well managed can end a partnership forever. So Dusty's Law was passed as a result of a lot of work by this puppy raiser with the support of people at the Seeing Eye. Jim and Ginger Kutch were extremely instrumental in supporting efforts to advance Dusty's Law. And then Dusty's Law was passed. And what it does is essentially is that it makes it a criminal offense in the state of New Jersey to interfere with a service animal and with a guide dog or with a puppy that is being raised to be a guide dog. And there are varying levels of criminal penalty associated with the types of interference. So, for example, if it is reckless interference, there may be one penalty. But if the dog is injured, the criminal penalty increases significantly. So it has varying levels of criminal penalty associated with the severity of the offense. And there is no requirement that the dog be in discharge of its duties while the attack is happening in order for the criminal penalty to attach, which is very important because a lot of states have guide dog or service animal protection laws, but they don't all have the same teeth to the laws, and sometimes mm-hmm. there are some requirements that make it tough. And then in New Jersey, of course, someone who is found guilty of one of these offenses can be required to make restitution in terms of the damages that are suffered as a result of the attack or the interference. You know, if the dog is not able to work anymore and the person has to be matched with another dog and undergo that training, vet bills, there are all sorts of ways that a person can be required to make restitution if they are found to have committed an offense under Dusty's Law. And that's a really important component of the law. I have the privilege of working to increase public awareness about these issues now, but people who came before me at the CNI are really the ones that deserve the credit for the hard work that got us here to have Dusty's Law.
All right, we're getting close to the end. And real quick, Melissa, and then I want to ask Glenn a question and then let Charlie close it out with a question, is that real quick, because I was surprised when you shared with me that, that D.C. didn't have specific guide dog law, or Maryland, and now Charlie and us are working on that. But do most of the states have a law or do not have a law?
Most states have something that offers some protection for people who have guide dogs or service animals. They vary in their effectiveness and in their strengths, but there are a few jurisdictions that still don't have them, which is concerning. And so, of course, any work that can be done to change that by guide dog handlers in those places, I think is very important. There are protections offered by the animal cruelty statute, of course.
Right.
But
right.
Yeah.
But that's not specific, mm-hmm. and that's what we're going to work on after that Dusty's Law. Glenn, thanks again very much. And just real quick, and then Charlie can ask a question before we close it out. Is the grounds of CNI, the buildings are closed? Completely closed? I mean, other than, the maintenance of people coming around.
Yes, at the moment, our beautiful campus is pretty quiet. Today, it's myself and a security guard that are in. And a couple of other staff have stopped by to get me to sign some things, some thank you letters out to donors. But, as far as people being on campus, all of our dog vans, our kennels are empty. Not much barking going on. And
lounge
flowers are in bloom. It's spring here and it's beautiful. So
and the lounge is closed as well. I take it in the city, that wonderful lounge that we go in.
Yes, right. That we just refurnished it, but it is closed.
Oh.
Yeah, and our wonderful
food
service.
So Glenn, if there is
service,
any barking, is what you're saying is you're probably you or yeah. others might be responsible
right.
if there's any barking at this point, right?
Exactly. Even our two distraction cats who are on our staff have been fostered to one of our trainers.
Oh, wow.
She took them home. Crosby and Nash are two distraction cats who roam the halls, and
yes.
they were getting kind of bored because there were no dogs, and their job is, month after month, they get a whole crop of new dogs to distract and to bully, and they weren't able to do that.
So they got to stay in the house now.
On another fun note, I will just mention that we were also, a lot of work was done by the Seeing Eye with our friends to established legislation that passed unanimously in both houses of the New Jersey legislature and was signed by the governor in January to name the Seeing Eye dog as New Jersey's state dog.
Yes,
so,
yeah, we wanted to say yes, mention that.
It's kind of fun.
We
had a state horse and a state bird and a state mammal, but not, and even a state microbe, but we never had a state canine until now.
Yeah, state dog. Charlie, you want to ask the last question, then we're going to have our, and then we're going to thank our guests again, and our announcer will close us out, and we thank them so much. Charlie, you have a parting question?
Sure. Consistent with the times, mask. More states are beginning to require that people wear masks, you know, when they go out, even just for essential things like the grocery store or whatever. And I'm concerned if you've had any experience with seeing eye dogs and or guide dogs in general and having to encounter people with masks. Is that a problem or is it just no big deal?
Good question. I know we have started wearing them. We probably should have been doing it, you know, weeks ago. But in most of the hot spots now, it's highly recommended, if not required, to wear a mask when you go out in public. And the governor of New Jersey has more or less decreed that you should wear a mask. You're saying in terms of just in terms of the distancing and the encounters between a guide dog user and another person?
Or distractibility of the dogs.
Right, that's a good question. Melissa, do you have a sense that distracted dogs?
I would say that I was concerned about Luna being distracted by my mask. And she doesn't seem to be... I wore it around a little bit, around the house for a couple minutes before we went outside so she could get used to seeing it. And she really didn't have a strong reaction, I think, because she saw me put it on and because she knows me. But I have noticed that the environment that we're in being different, that being less traffic, more pedestrians out at weird times with their dogs, and perhaps a little more garbage in areas that is not being cleaned up by sanitation workers because I don't think they have as many out, you know, things that you have to keep your dog on task from getting distracted by. I've noticed that we have to work a little harder in situations like that, but I've, not noticed my dog shying away from people or behaving strangely as a result of the presence of masks. And I had that same question. And I do get out and about to get exercise and walk, so.
Well, that's the music. I want to thank y'all very, very, very much, and I look forward to, I just got my dog, which is 2 years old, Miss Raven, so I guess I'll probably see you in another 8, 9, 10 years maybe. But I just want to close with what Charlie asked about the mask. Now, my dog don't have a problem with the mask, but as a black man, I have enough problems going in a place with a dog and with a mask, too, that's been causing problems.
Oh.
So I close.
Yeah, right.
So anyway, thank y'all very much. I appreciate it. God bless you all, and we'll look forward to talking to you all down the road. Thank you.
Thank you.
Glenn,
pleasure to be on.
Thank you for the opportunity. Thank you so
all
much.
All right. Thank you. Charlie, that's it for our show today, and our time is up. We want to thank our audience for their time, and until the next time, this is Reverend Ray Razor and Mr. Charlie C., which is Charlie Crawford, and we will see you all next week, and we just want to pet your pup. So this is CAGDU, and our announcer will close us out with contact information. Ms. Renee.
You have been listening to CAGDU, About Your Dog and You. The Capital Area Dog Guide users are located in the nation's capital. We are heard here every Friday at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time. Do you have a question or a show idea? You can contact us in all the usual ways. Our email is cagdu2020@gmail.com. That's cagdu2020@gmail.com. Or you can give us a call at 301-263-7371. Again, that's 301-263-7371. 877-711.